Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform with Justin Asiri, where I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 35 with Casey Carroll.
And I think that's one of the things that I love most about my job is that my whole life I've always been kind of interested in the news and what's going on in the world. And now I feel like I get paid to pay attention to it. Any obscure reference, like you could basically make a case that it can have an effect on the market. And for that reason, you truly have to stay completely engaged in what's going on.
The top reason to listen to today's episode is finance. Casey is in high yield sales and trading at Wells Fargo. He talks about what the industry is, what his job looks like on a day-to-day basis, why veterans are well-suited for this high-stress job where you put your money where your mouth is. If you're interested in learning more about the world of finance, this is the perfect episode for you. So here is my interview with Casey Carroll. Well, my guest today, joining me from Charlotte, North Carolina, is Casey Carroll. Casey, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
So for listeners, a quick background on Casey. He works at Wells Fargo in their credit sales department. He started out at Duke University, where he studied history and visual arts and was on the men's lacrosse team. He then served for 4.5 years in the Army with the Rangers as a fire team leader. After transitioning from the Army, he returned to Duke, this time at their Fuqua School of Business. To start out, I'd love to go back to that point when you knew that you were going to transition from the Army. When did you know you were going to leave, and how did you approach that decision?
That's a really good question, because I think, like a lot of guys, or men and women who have left, for long after, you're always thinking about, all right, well, if I stayed in, if I got out, this and that. And I really felt that there were a few things kind of driving my decision making. One was that, I was married but didn't have any kids in the military, and I think all the men and women who have served, whether they had kids or, obviously served with people that had kids, they can attest that there's probably no harder job in the military than the job of raising a family while there. So, while I was in 3rd Ranger Battalion, I spent the first 9 months of the first year that I was married away from my wife, and it didn't get necessarily that much easier over the time. So, given the amount of time we spent away, I felt that when I was ready to have kids, I'd probably look to transition out of the military. And then the other part of that is, I went in having kind of pretty defined goals of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to accomplish while there, not realizing, how much I really was going to enjoy it and how hard it would be for me to leave. But I felt like I accomplished those main things, and I was just kind of ready for that next chapter of my life, the next challenge.
That's great. And looking back on that transition to civilian life, what was some of the more surprising things about the transition to civilian life that you didn't know to expect?
That's a really good question. I think, just truly speaking candidly, two things that there really is, like, basically when you leave the military, maybe like unless you're going into other government services, stuff like that, you're going to be hard pressed to find a job that, or at least, and again, this is speaking from my own personal experience, but I don't think I'll ever have a job that gives me that same amount of pride when I look in the mirror.
Yeah.
But you just have to find different things, different reasons for you do what you do. For me, I feel like being out in the civilian world helps me be a better husband and father. And, there's a lot of other things, but the bottom line is that, being a service member was absolutely the proudest, job that I could ever hold. And so that's definitely one thing that I hadn't really thought about before I left the military. It was just something that maybe in a lot of ways I had taken for granted. And then the other part of that is, you know, that feeling of camaraderie that you have. I played sports teams my whole life. I went into the military where it was just, you know, from one team onto another, and the bonds you form there that, you know, anybody, any one of your active duty, you know, listeners would surely attest to, I hope, is that, you know, you form bonds there that, you know, are very hard to duplicate in the civilian world. But I think one of the things that I was able to do was connect with a lot of other veterans within Wells Fargo and in the greater Charlotte community. And that's really been, I think, one of the biggest helps in my transitioning is, you know, like I sit shoulder to shoulder with a guy who is a helicopter pilot, and, you know, and all the things that, you know, I had taken for granted, you know, just, you know, nobody can complain better than somebody that has been in the military. I think, you know, it's a point of pride, I think, in service members, and I certainly thought it was, you know, we could gripe with the best of them. And, you know, through the good things and the bad things, whatever it is, having somebody with that shared military experience is invaluable in my transition. I think that I would have had a much tougher time transitioning to the civilian world had I not had a guy like Frank Van Buren, who I think you might be having on the show as well. But, I mean, he was absolutely invaluable to me, kind of navigating all those things of corporate life and just, you know, being out of the military. It truly is a transition that is hard to do alone, and having people like that in my life made me feel like I never was alone in that process.
That's great. Yeah, I echo those sentiments around the camaraderie and the, I guess, just the purpose in your job of having a job that you fully believe in, and you know that you're doing something good in the world. And I like your thoughts on how you've, you know, tried to fill in that gap on the other side with those relationships with other veterans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit about business school. And so when you did leave the military, did you consider any jobs directly, or did you know you wanted to go directly back to grad school?
So that's a great question. I think my experience was pretty unique because on top of, you know, wanting to gain, like the way I saw it is that in the military, especially because I was in, you know, in Ranger Battalion where you're part of the infantry, you know, you develop so many skills that I feel like the corporate world, the civilian world finds invaluable. But going to a place like business school for 2 years, it helps you take those raw skills and hone them into, you know, vital tools. Because I think had I come straight out of the military and jumped into the corporate world, Lord knows what would have happened to me. So, you know, business school just gives you a great foundation for kind of any direction you want to pivot to in your life. And so it made sense for me to hone those raw skills there. And also I had the opportunity to go back and play lacrosse again as a, you know, a guy in my late 20s with a family and all that on the Duke lacrosse team. So it was kind of like a cool experience that I knew would be unique. And so I thought it'd be a cool little, you know, fun thing to do on the side while going after the MBA. But had that not been, you know, I definitely looked at different options for going straight into the job market. And I just felt at that time that, you know, having a couple of years to get a better feel for what opportunities were out there and gain a broader network was definitely going to be a help for me. And that's certainly what I found. But and lastly, I would say there's a lot of people who have come from the civilian world, obviously most people who go to business school come from the civilian world, and most of them pay their own way, and they're going there just because, you know, they don't like where they're at, and they're just ready for whatever that next step is. But because they don't have a plan, they don't end up getting everything they could out of it. I think a lot of that risk is taken off the table when we have the support of the post 9/11 GI Bill. And so, like, I knew that I could go to business school and not come away with, you know, a couple $100,000 of debt. And that was, you know, that was certainly a big selling point to me to be able to gain that experience. And of course, you're missing out on some opportunity cost of, had you been working during those 2 years. But I think the experience gained in lieu of that was certainly worth it.
Yeah, and it it definitely seems like a great way, like you said, to gain your bearings as you make that transition and figure out what else is out there before jumping into a career for the next couple of years. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for those veterans thinking of applying to business school or Duke in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's all about doing your research and having, you know, a plan when you get there. And, you know, as anybody in the military knows, like, you know, no good plan survives first contact. But if you kind of have something driving the why, I think it sets you up for success, absolutely. And that is, that's going to help you, for one, choose the business school that you want to go to, because, you know, there are many great business schools out there, but some specialize in certain things that, you know, can get you better equipped if you know, you know, where, what you want to do in that next step. But, you know, on the other side of that is just, if you don't know, if you're not completely sure of what to do and all that, it can still help in that transition of, like, okay, well, when I'm talking to interviewers for that first summer internship and all that, when you're able to explain, like, hey, you know, I worked on a nuclear sub, I had experience in this and that, in engineering, I thought that I wanted to, you know, parlay that experience into a job in, you know, at SpaceX or something like that. And then you go to business school and find out, like, you know, as much as you like that, you took some core courses and marketing was the way to go. Like, you felt like you were, you know, more naturally drawn to, or finance or something like that. It helps you kind of define, you know, why you're there. Because at the end of the day, the people sitting on the other side of the table that want to hire you, they want to see people with purpose in their life. And people in the military, you know, you automatically can point to so many things that are, you know, purpose-driven in your decision-making for so long in your life, to be able to continue that and show that, you know, you're a goal-oriented person who's on a mission. I think employers are absolutely craving that, because what else is out there from the civilian population, I don't think they are able to find people that are that experienced, but also that young, and have that kind of mindset in life. There are a lot of people who, you know, at the time I was 29 or so, you know, there's a lot of other 29-year-olds who are just kind of, you know, just working their way through life, you know, kind of going from one opportunity to another. But when you have that purpose-driven mindset, I think that's what makes you incredibly valuable to you know, any employer. And then having the business school on top of that is, you know, knowing what you want to get out of business school will make every time, every moment you're there valuable.
That's great. And
I apologize for the long-winded.
No. I'm agreeing with a lot of what you're saying. I think it's like you had talked about at the start, that that purpose, I think, is a big component for a lot of veterans of what they liked about the military. And then being able to find that outside as well, and having a new mission, and being able to talk to employers about, you know, where you want to go. I think that's extremely critical. And I'm wondering, when you look back on your time at Duke, what did you like most and what did you like least about your time there?
So what I liked, I'll start with the least. So it's kind of the good and the bad. Was Fuqua in particular, at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke, their two biggest components that they do better than anyone else is, one, that it's an international focused program. So 40% of the student body had come from outside of the country, and I think that is really cool. In that, you know, there's a lot of different diversity metrics you can go by, but having the true diversity of an international student body, that was a very cool thing. And then the other component of that is their team mentality. So, you know, there certain schools are known for being much more individual oriented. Fuqua is known for being team oriented, and I truly say that it's not just something they put on a brochure. So like for your core courses in your first year, like you get put on a 6-person team and you have to do, you know, a multitude of team projects that, you know, it's great to have people to bounce ideas off of, but it's also a learning experience for everyone to kind of learn to work on other people's schedules and pace and, you know, all the things that, you know, people in the military are fully accustomed to. And I think one of my biggest frustrations at the time was two things in that. One is, a lot of my fellow students had never been on a team before. You know, they never played peewee baseball or, you know, worked on any sort of team. Like they had gone through their life, you know, without that experience. And that was, you know, that was the thing where they're learning for the first time how to interact with, to truly interact towards a common goal with other people. And, you know, there's a natural friction of just wanting to, you know, solve the problem and move on, but also realizing like, hey, this person, you know, this person needs to benefit from, you know, bouncing all these ideas off people and all that sort of thing. So that was one of my frustrations, but at the same time, that was, I think, what I loved most about it, was that it forced me to, like, at the end of every semester, we would have this thing where everybody has to give feedback on everybody else in the team. And for the first, you know, so we'd go around a room, and, you know, I had two kids under the age of 2 at this time. So I'm like sort of 1 foot out the door, like, hey, I got to get home, you know, take care of the family, and, you know, a long list of things I had to do. But everybody had to give feedback on everybody else. And so everybody would be giving, it would be like the first 5 minutes of commentary from each person would be like, oh, you're so good at this, we love how you do that, this and that. And then at the very last part, they'd say, but, you know, if I could work on something, and, you know, being in the military where I think people are much more direct with you, and through all my time in sports, you know, I can appreciate people trying to save, you know, my feelings and all that. But we would get to the point where, like, okay, all right, so now it's the turn for me to get the feedback from everybody else. And so, like, when I was saying 5 minutes each person, it was 5 minutes each person that would give all that, you know, fluffy feedback and then get to the real thing. Like, I stopped them. I was like, guys, I really love where your heart's at, and I appreciate that, you know, that you think I'm working hard and this and that, because that, you know, I know that I'm working hard, but, like, cut to it. Like, my feelings won't get hurt. This is, like, please tell me what I need to work on, because your feedback truly is invaluable to my development, and I want to hear all the worst of it. Like, just go for it. And, like, so that was, like, kind of one of the frustrations, but ended up being, like, you know, not everybody interacts like that. And a lot of people don't have that thick skin where they truly understand what constructive criticism is all about. And so learning that tact of, you know, working with people who have never worked on teams before, or it's just kind of, you know, diversity truly is, I think, a truly valuable thing on any team. And having lived through that type of diversity with, you know, people with international backgrounds, where, you know, we had people from, I had somebody from China, somebody from Morocco, somebody from India, and two different Americans from, you know, very diverse backgrounds in other senses on my team. And so it was like the true nature of diversity, and people were just, their cultural differences were shockingly different. And so it, like, kind of working through, like, hey, you know, diversity is definitely something you find in the military all the time, but there's also more things that you probably line up on than you previously thought. So I think the big takeaway that I got from there was, my biggest frustration actually turned out to be what I loved most about it, and that's learning and understanding to deal with a variety of people on a daily basis that have, you know, seemingly like nothing in common with you, but working towards that common goal and actually achieving it, and learning how to, you know, leverage that difference. Because, you know, by the end of that first year, you know, the team that couldn't answer one problem in 6 hours is now just cranking out stuff and understanding the strengths and weaknesses of everybody, and leveraging all of those to become, you know, a fully well-oiled machine.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about it like that, but it seems like that's really true, where in the military, we have a lot of common values and a common structure or framework to solve problems. And when I think of business school, I think of the diversity of industry and functional experience. But I like that you're highlighting the cultural differences as well, especially with such an incredible international base. And so I love that thought of learning to work in a very diverse team in every area, and learning to communicate and work in sync together. And I hadn't thought about that before. So that's really fascinating.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And let's talk about Wells Fargo. So for someone who's on active duty, how would you explain what you do for a living?
Yeah. So what the specific role that I'm a part of is high yield sales and trading. When you think of kind of the stock market guys in the long rows of desks where everybody's next to each other, and, you know, you're eating lunch on the desk and all that sort of stuff, it's that type of environment with, you know, the whole bunch of computer screens and all that. But basically what we do is we trade the debt of riskier companies on this. So, and there's a lot of them that you've heard of, where it'd be like Burger King and maybe Automotive amongst, you know, a whole bunch of others, and a lot of companies that you've never heard of. And so basically we just kind of, we match buyers and sellers and use our recommendations and our relationships to try to help our customers out, because the customers are, you know, insurance companies, pension plans, hedge funds, mutual funds, and all these, you know, big giant customers. And all of them, you know, they all want to achieve certain goals that are generally aligned, but they all have different, you know, investing profiles that meet their needs. And so we're just kind of trading the debt and distributing the risk of those companies. So if, you know, for instance, if Sonic Automotive, if they wanted to, you know, buy maybe a smaller car dealership or something like that, and they wanted the money to do that, they might use high-yield bonds to help finance that. So maybe they use, you know, $100 million of cash that they have along, they'll take out maybe, you know, a $500 million term loan, which a loan which would be like similar to the mortgage on your house. And then they could also use high-yield bonds or use some stock to pay for that. So they could use any one of those individual things, or they could use a mix of all of them. But we kind of help we help those companies raise capital to, you know, meet the needs of their business, and then we distribute that risk to different investors that will get, you know, they get paid an interest on those bonds. So, you know, a really risky company might have, they might pay a 10% interest rate on the bonds that we issue them, or, you know, a less risky company might only pay, you know, 4% or something like that. So higher the risk, higher the reward, and those two things kind of go in balance, and we just match the buyers and sellers all day long.
So what does that look like on a day-to-day basis? Like, if you had a typical day, you know, what time do you get into the office, and what sort of things are you doing throughout the day?
So I get in the office at 6:45 a.m., and I leave the office at like 5:30 every day. So let's see, how would I describe it? Basically, like, the way I see it is that in our business, we move on news all the time. And so, like, for instance, I've, you know, told some of our interns this, that, you know, like, Oprah had tweeted that she lost like 5 pounds on Weight Watchers. And that tweet moved the markets in the Weight Watchers terminal multiple points. So it was a company that, you know, like, was kind of, investors weren't so sure that they were going to be able to make the payments on that debt. And then Oprah gets involved in it and says that she lost weight. And so naturally, you know, if she tweets it, then other people who follow her are like, wow, yeah, maybe I'll give Weight Watchers a shot. And so people are buying that term loan because they think, you know, the return for that risk is, you know, better in that scenario. And then on the other side, you have, you know, U.S. GDP numbers and stuff like that. The gross domestic product of the U.S. is, you know, hypothetically, it's 2%, and everybody's excited about it, and that will move markets. And so everything from Oprah making a tweet to, you know, the GDP of the U.S. or China or something like that, and everything in between has a direct effect on our market.
So do you have just news sites open and Twitter? Are you just like constantly, between making these trades, you're just like constantly learning about what's going on in the world each day? Is that accurate?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I love most about my job is that my whole life I've always been kind of interested in the news and what's going on in the world. And now I feel like I get paid to pay attention to it because, you know, there's not like on the TV right now, you know, white tiger cubs make public debut at China Zoo. Okay, well, you know, like maybe like in Macau, there might be some casinos where they start to like bring those tigers in, and we hold the bonds of Chinese casinos, stuff like that. Like it, any obscure reference, like you could basically make a case that it can have an effect on the market. And for that reason, like you truly have to stay completely engaged in what's going on in the day-to-day. You know, naturally, politics and what, you know, is going on in the current election is extremely topical because, you know, if Trump were to get elected, you can imagine that, you know, the different results in taxes and immigration and all that. We have a lot of companies who depend very heavily on, you know, immigration and all those tax implications and all that sort of stuff, and the overall health of the economy. So, you know, there's always something going on in the news driving everything, and that's absolutely something that I find fascinating and keeps my day from being, you know, the same old every day of the week.
I just can't imagine how much your industry has changed in the last couple decades, in that, like, it just seems like we're at a point in history where there has never been more access to news in real time. And it sounds like your industry depends so much on that information. So it just must be an exciting time to be in your industry, because you have, like you said, with a tweet, the fact that a celebrity can instantly share her thoughts and that has an impact on the market, it just must be so crazy trying to keep up with everything.
It is. And I think, you know, the technology has developed that, because asymmetry of information is, you know, the most valuable thing in the world. Because if something, and granted, this isn't insider trading or anything like that, but if you're the first to know the news, then you have an advantage on every other investor. And so, I mean, like, naturally, you know, we deal with friendly customers, and we don't try to take advantage of our customers, and, you know, the good ones don't try to take advantage of us. But, you know, everybody is trying to get an advantage, and so you have to protect yourself and protect the profitability of the trading desk and all that, because, you know, if you were trying to sell Weight Watchers bonds at, let's just call it $90, and somebody saw that news and knew that they were going to be worth $110, and they were able to buy them from you at 90, you know, you basically just got ripped off. And so, yeah, having access to information is the most valuable thing in this business. And certainly companies pay lots and lots of money to make sure that they are the first to know all that information.
So back at Duke, how did you know you wanted to go into finance, and how did you find your way to Wells Fargo?
Well, so naturally, like, in the world of college lacrosse, there's a lot of guys that go to finance straight out of college. And so I was kind of loosely aware of the business then, but I knew that I wanted to go to the military, you know, indefinitely at the time. But what drew me in was, like, kind of, not that I'm really a gambler or anything like that, but I always saw it as, you know, this is a really cool industry, in that not only, you know, anybody can have an opinion, but when you have an opinion and you put your money where your mouth is, and you have to say, like, hey, I think, you know, these Burger King bonds, like, they're trading down here, and I think that they should trade up because they're worth this, you know, your opinion is worth, you know, very little unless you're willing to stick your neck out on it. And there's, you know, a few better ways to stick your neck out than put your money where your mouth is. I found that really intriguing, and I was really intrigued by that process of, you know, if you do your homework and you know a business really well, and you're able to find a place where you think that something is undervalued or overvalued, and you can make a call, like, I think that's a really cool thing. And naturally, like, a lot of the people in the military, you know, I'm not risk averse, you know, like, I'm not freaking out at the first sign of, you know, heightened tensions or risk or anything like that. And so I think my experience in the military is certainly benefiting me here at Wells Fargo.
That's, you know, I never put this together, but when I think of veterans, I associate them with a group of people with high accountability, that generally they say something and they stick to that commitment. And what I'm liking about your description with sales and trading is it is a career where you have to put your money where your mouth is. Like, you're not just spouting off opinions, but you're making moves to back up that decision with action. And when you put it that way, it does seem really well aligned for a lot of veterans, that I could see that those strengths would help. And, you know, I guess maybe that's something I'd love to learn more about, is, like, if a veteran is listening and they think they might be interested in sales and trading, what are some indications that they might really like this sort of career? And what are some indications that they might hate it or not be well suited for it?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, the vast majority of veterans that I've ever come in contact with were, the bottom line, they're, you know, hardworking. They don't, you know, as I was joking about griping or whatever, but they're not complaining about, you know, having to work hard. They understand what it takes, and they're willing to stick with it. I think one of the biggest complaints that we always hear about the millennial generation is that, you know, there's no patience and they want everything now. And I think if in the military, you fully understand what it means to be patient, because, you know, we've all been put through that ringer where, you know, it, things aren't necessarily happening right away and it's frustrating, but, you know, you're willing to just be patient and keep working hard. And that is, I think, the most critical component to success here. You know, it's not always the smartest guy in the room that is the most successful. It's the man or woman who, you know, is willing to learn, you know, just shut up and learn. And when they know what they're talking about, and, you know, they can build relationships through hard work. There's a guy that I work with who described the business to me in, he said that there are two boxes. There's the relationship box and there's the knowledge box. You build good relationships unless you really know what you're talking about in the knowledge box. And your knowledge box really can never get that strong unless you have relationships, because, like I said, information is the most vital thing in this business, and a lot of the information you get is from your customers. And you're only going to get that information if you have good relationships, and they trust you, and, you know, they know that you're not trying to, you know, screw them over in any way. And I think, you know, I don't think you could describe a business that lines up much better with the military folks than that. You know, like, is that person trustworthy? Yes. Is that person hardworking? Yes. You know, are they willing to just stick with it and be patient? Yes. Like, that, those are three, I think, pillars of what makes the majority of the people coming out of the military. And that's absolutely, you know, three things that make people successful in this industry.
That's great. That's great. You know, just one thing I'm curious about. So I think of all the positive habits that I gained from the military in terms of work ethic and discipline and integrity and so many things that I hold close to me. I'm wondering, were there any habits that you had to break getting out of the military, things that you had to unlearn to be successful on the other side?
Definitely, sir. Calling everybody sir was not helpful. I did my first internship after my first year of business school, and one of the guys, who he wasn't in the military or whatever, but he, like, brought me into his office, and he's like, listen, Casey, love you, you're a good guy, but you just got to stop calling everybody sir. I was like, yes, sir, all right. And he's like, no, man, like, because, I mean, the way he saw it, and now I see this perspective, that, like, it's hard for people to look at you as a peer if you're always addressing them in that subordinated fashion. And especially having been in the enlisted ranks, you know, that thing, calling people sir, is absolutely ingrained into you at a very early stage. So, and as it is, you know, with everybody, just showing that, we always saw it as, you know, just a sign of respect. And as much as it still is, I think in the job world, is related to me, that it's best it's easier to gain that respect on equal footing if you know, stop addressing everybody as sir. So that was definitely one quick thing that I learned. And then the other thing was kind of like what I mentioned about business school, is that, you know, the way you work with a team in the military, the vast majority of those concepts are absolutely translatable to the outside world, and they're very valuable. But part of that is, you know, that added little nuance of tact in, you know, talking to people who aren't used to being, you know, maybe talking so directly to. And so just, I mean, it, you know, I'm not some gorilla who doesn't know how to speak to people, but it's just like, you know, one added little nuance of like, oh yeah, okay, like this, you know, this person, you know, I can accomplish more and I could have them more on my side if I kind of engage with them in a different manner or something like that.
That's great. I'm thinking of a friend of mine who's in sales. Your thought about, you know, being on the same level or peer level, and he was just talking about in sales how, you know, he never says at the start of a meeting, thanks for your time, because he wants to put them on equal footing where both of their time is valuable. Or, you know, he never buys someone coffee or a meal. Or if he does, he's like, oh, you get the next one. It's like all about, in his perspective, always trying to place yourself on the same level as the person you're dealing with. And I think that's really valuable, that sense of sir or kind of deferential or treating someone as superior can stand in the way or inhibit forming a relationship as equals that could benefit the business situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great tip. Mm.
Well, I guess, you know, you've covered a lot of great things and very valuable information for veterans. I guess the last thing I would ask is just an open-ended question of for a community of veterans listening right now, any other advice that you'd want to pass along or things that you'd want to say to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when it comes to when you realize, okay, my next step is going to be away from the military, you know, what are those steps? I think what it comes down to is leveraging the network you have. I think there's a lot of guys in the military who, you know, don't fully utilize because they're afraid to ask for help. But, you know, no matter what position you are, what branch you are in the military, everybody has a network. Everybody's interconnected where, you know, if you've never met somebody that's worked in sales and trading or investment banking, you know, that doesn't mean that you don't have a network that can reach out to veterans that have already, you know, blazed that trail. Because at the end of the day, you know, there are veterans, as everyone knows, all over the world doing just about every job in the world there is to do. And it's extremely important to network and use those people to help you, because that was something that I was hesitant to do right off the bat, because, you know, I wanted to do things for myself and asking for help was something that never came naturally to me. But realizes, you know, and what I realize now especially is that, like, it took a lot of help from different connections who, you know, it wasn't even a guy I knew directly, but it was a friend of a friend of a friend or something like that. And somebody helped that guy get into that position. And the only cost to you is that when you get to your position, it is absolutely your duty to help out those coming behind you, because, you know, trails have been blazed at this point. So use those people who have, you know, who have gotten into those positions for your benefit, and absolutely just pay it back when you get to your spot.
That's great. No, that's great advice.
And also like the last thing, like when it comes to transitioning, and I absolutely, honestly to you, Justin, like there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about the military and, you know, other things, like other things that could have been going on. But, you know, it was absolutely, you know, other than, of course, marrying my wife and having kids and all that, it was absolutely the best decision I ever made in my life to join the military. And moving away from that can be very difficult. And, you know, the same thing when looking for a job, don't be afraid to reach out and grow your network. Everything away from job, just life in general, there are so many veterans out there who just have been through what you're about to go through or have been through what you're currently going through. And everybody, like, there's just so much help out there for the men and women that are coming out of the military or still in the military, that, like, I just would urge anybody, you know, whether it's about finding a job or it's about, you know, I'm going through some struggles right now personally or something like that, you know, just please use the help that's out there, because we've all been through it. You know, there are dark days, but there are way more bright days than just, you know, hang in there, because it gets better all the time. I absolutely love the transition that I made, but I absolutely couldn't have done it without leaning on a lot of people.
Yeah, I echo all of that. I feel like taking advantage of the veteran community to either pass along help or seek help when it's needed to find a perspective or find a connection. So thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your advice, and just really appreciate the positive and balanced perspective you had on your time in the military and your time since then.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on, Justin. Thanks a lot, man. And I hope this can shed some insight into the world of sales and trading and just for transitioning veterans in general. But thanks a lot for having me on, man.
Yeah, thanks so much. Take care.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.